Hello and welcome to Root Causes, the PKI and security podcast where a pair of industry veterans talk about all kinds of things, digital certificates, and PKI. I am Tim Callen, senior fellow at Sigtigo, and I am joined by Jason Sirocco, CTO of IoT at Sigtigo. How are you doing today, Jay?
Doing great, Tim. Feet are still hurting after Black Hat and DEF CON, but that's another story.
Black Hat and DEF CON, yes. Black Hat is just over. I think DEF CON is still finishing up. It does. The two do go for a long time back to back that way. And we're here to talk about some recent developments, one of which, by the way, there's another conference. You mentioned Black Hat and DEF CON, but as we record this, there's a conference going on in Santa Clara, California called USENIX. And USENIX actually had an interesting piece of research that I'd like to talk about today regarding phishing and SSL certificates. So maybe we can start there.
Thanks, Tim. Yeah, I think you sent me the link to the report. There seemed to be some interesting, if not conclusions, that some of the numbers were kind of interesting to look at.
Yeah, so a team of researchers from RWTH Aachen University, and I don't know much about German universities, so I had to look this up, but it's the Rheinische Westfälische Technische Hochschule, and according to Wikipedia, it is the largest technical institution in Germany. So there we are. So RWTH Aachen University, this team went out and they obtained certificates, and they got they obtained about 10,000 certificates from known phishing sites, certificates that were used on phishing sites, and then they got about 40,000 certificates from what they call benign sites, sites that were non-phishing sites, and they have their methodologies all spelled out in their paper, but the idea is that they're supposed to be, you know, homogenous. And what they did was they compared the groups of certificates against each other. And there are a number of interesting conclusions in there. And it's an interesting paper that we may dig into more. But one of the, I think there were a couple conclusions that jumped out at me that are directly talking to the idea of certificates and their value in providing identity for a site and getting information that people can use. And one is that on the whole, when they compared the phishing certs to the domains that they were trying to replicate, they say, and this is a direct quote, that these phishing certs do not typically replicate issue and subject information from the sites they're trying to imitate. So in other words, the certs that are used on the phishing sites are very unlikely to actually contain information that is imitative of the site that they are trying to spoof, right? So if I'm trying to spoof a major bank, I don't have a cert on there that has the name of the major bank in the organization field, by way of example. So that was one interesting conclusion. And of course, before I get to the second interesting conclusion, that says something, I think, about the original purpose of SSL certificates, which was to tell you who you're connecting with. And even now, you know, we use these certs on these phishing sites. They use it to get the lock icon, but that original purpose still potentially has value.
Yeah, I'll agree with that, Tim. And I guess your EV certs come to mind when you think about identity because of the full extended validation of the essentially the owner of the site, or
right,
perhaps more accurately, the legal entity that owns the domain. Right?
Correct. And so, of course, the reason we have EV is because the organization validation concept was fundamentally unpoliced. And at the time, you know, therefore, it was hard for a relying party to turn around and say, I'm prepared to trust this OV information, because there was no transparency and no real consistency between CAs, and maybe not even consistency over time. An individual CA might change its practices. So it was hard for relying parties to make the judgment to say, I'm prepared to trust that this cert is telling me who this is. However, EV is different because it's codified, it's transparent, it's consistent, and ultimately it's highly reliable. It's very accurate information. So this comes to finding number two from the Aachen study that I thought was interesting, was they compared the percentage of the known phishing certs that were EV to the percentage of the known benign certs that were EV. So on the phishing sites, the percent that were EV was 0.0. 0.4%. So 0.4% of these roughly 10,000 phishing sites were EV. When you get over to the benign sites, of the roughly 40,000 benign certs, 7% of them were EV. So that's showing that there is a order of magnitude greater propensity for a legitimate site, a non-phishing site, to have an EV cert than a phishing site. And I think that's a very important finding.
Sure. The bad guys just, it's difficult to get EV. Therefore, why would the bad guys want to use EV? That makes sense.
Right. And a lot of people like to talk about the Stripe example and what happened in the Stripe, if we can call it an attack. The Stripe experiment last year was a security researcher named Ian Carroll actually created a company in Kentucky that he called Stripe Incorporated, and then got an EV cert for Stripe Incorporated in Kentucky, which was a real company, and then proceeded to make a big deal about it. And the fallacy with the conclusion that a lot of people want to come to, which is that we must throw out EV, or one of the several fallacies with that, of course, is that it was trivially easy to figure out what that company was and who the owner was. And Ian Carroll didn't actually commit any fraud with this cert that anybody knows of, and I'm sure there's no reason to believe that he did. But hypothetically, if he had been, it would have been trivially easy to find him. And that's one of the points behind the authentication is, authentication, a CA can't necessarily tell you that somebody isn't going to go do something bad, right? We can't predict the future. This isn't Minority Report. But the CA can tell you who did that bad thing. And at that point, we have things like law enforcement and the legal system, and you can arrest somebody or you can sue somebody. And those are very real deterrents in the real world from people being fraudulent or dishonest or otherwise malicious.
Yeah, Tim, I'm just trying to imagine if somebody's trying to commit phishing, right, a phishing attack, what would be most advantageous is the velocity at which you could obtain a certificate and then utilize it.
Yeah.
And so therefore, doing something like utilizing, especially something that doesn't require payment, because payment typically, will connect an identity. That's the last thing a bad guy wants.
Right.
So free and easy, right? Free and easy is what the bad guys are typically going to want. EV is neither of those two things.
And the economics of it are just very different. Part of the reason phishing works is it's incredibly cheap. It's automated. It can be run by anywhere in the world. And most phishing schemes today are run by, some sort of script kiddie, somebody who isn't really creating anything original themselves. They're taking things that have already been created for them and they're just running them. And so under these circumstances, part of the reason that it's economically viable to do this is that it's really, really cheap. And once you start doing things like making them create a business, again, Ian Carroll says, it only cost me $100 to buy my business license. Well, yeah, sure. But $100 changes the economics of this radically in a phishing world, especially if it's $100 per site, right? Per domain. So that would make your kind of classic broad phishing attempt completely economically infeasible.
Sure. Well, the numbers show it, yeah, right? That's what we're concluding from this paper.
Yeah. And then, of course, this ties into some other recent research that came out of Georgia Tech's Cyber Forensic Innovation Lab. They call it CYFI, C-Y-F-I. And what CYFI did was they gathered every domain they could find that had an EV cert going back to 2010. And they came up with a list of 2.6 million domains. And what they did is they compared those domains to a couple specific forms of bad actors. Now, phishing wasn't one of them, but malware distribution was, and activity in quote-unquote dark web, as they like to say, online marketing places was another one. And so they tried to see how it was connected to these forms of bad action, and they came back that the propensity for an EV cert to be clean of these bad actors was 99.99%. And so I think these two data points in conjunction are important because those are the two halves of it, right? It's malware distribution and classic phishing are the biggest threats that an ordinary consumer who's just trying to go to their bank or the place where they shop online faces. And so if you take those two pieces of research in conjunction, what they're showing is that the likelihood where an EV cert is present to run into these problems is exceedingly small.
Yeah, that paper out of Georgia Tech seemed to be quite a large sample size as well.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't try to sample. So again, if you look at the Aachen University, they're going to have some discussion of their methodology and how they came up with their sample. Sci-Fi, Georgia Tech, had a different approach, which is, well, we're not going to sample, we're just going to get all of them, right?
Yeah, sure. All is still a sample size.
All is still a sample size, yes. So we don't have to have a debate about how the sample was collected. So either way, yeah, I mean, I think those are very strong data points to kind of talk about. Fundamental point that in the event that EV cert is present on a site, and we can talk about, you know, the why, which you and I kind of got, but in the event that an EV cert is present on a site, it is much less likely that that site is malicious than if an EV cert is not present.
That's the data point, right? Right. Coming out of both papers. It's not difficult to imagine that that's because of the economics of hacking, right. Essentially, as sure. We said.
Yeah.
But there it is. You know, we're starting to see some data that actually is showing that.
And accountability as well. I mean, you mentioned accountability, and accountability is hugely important here because, you know, if I'm going to be arrested or if there's at least a chance that I'm going to be arrested, that's going to change behavior, right? And even if it's a fairly small chance, that could change behavior.
Again, if you're going to commit a crime, the last thing you want is for somebody to be able to identify you as being part of that crime. That's why we lift fingerprints, right?
Right.
So EV has two different things, which is there has to be a registered business. Obviously, in some jurisdictions, maybe that's not as comprehensive as it is perhaps in the United States or Canada or others.
Right.
But on the other hand, a lot of businesses that are trying to be perhaps spoofed are out of North America and Europe and places where there is some more comprehensive connecting to an actual person's identity. And failing all of that, these things have to be paid for. There's no such thing as a free EV certificate that I know of. And therefore, some payment has to be made. And that obviously connects you know, to a person's identity potentially as well.
Right. And some form of non-automated authentication has to take place. So once again, if I'm just going to set up my scripts and run this as a massive, cheap kind of effort where my CPUs are just spinning as fast as they can, that doesn't work. It doesn't lend itself to that kind of application. So, you know, once again, for all those reasons, it winds up being just highly negatively correlative with those activities. Now, this brings us to another development that's coming on, and this is something I think is a real disservice to users, which is that we have seen the systematic, deprecation isn't quite the right word, but the systematic de-emphasis of identity information, certificate identity information, especially with regard to EV in popular browsers going on over time. And of course, the most visible example of this is Chrome. Chrome did take the green away so that where the company name used to be green, now it's gray. And in doing so, it just became less visible. Chrome has announced that in their release 77, which is coming in October, that there will be no EV indicator in the address bar at all. And then we just saw an announcement from Firefox just a few days ago that their version 70, which is also coming in October, is going to do the same thing. It's going to strip out the EV indicator, and you're going to have to burrow down. You're actually going to have to click on the lock to even know that there's a difference, that there's identity information there at all. So a DV and an EV cert will look identical, and it won't be in either of these browsers until you actually click down a level that you even have the opportunity to see if that identity information is available. And I don't get it. I think they're doing something really bad for their users. And I think because these two browsers, between the two of them, have a majority of global market share, they feel they can get away with it. And unfortunately, they probably can, but it isn't going to be good for internet security. It's going to be bad for internet security. It isn't going to be good for the safety of a user. It's going to be bad for the safety of a user.
I don't know how it helps. I simply don't know why taking away that indicator helps. Some users understand what that is. Some may not.
Right.
The argument that some users don't understand what that indicator is, therefore take it away for everyone. Argument doesn't work.
It's an absurd argument. It would be like saying not everybody pays attention to cancer warnings tags on cigarette packs, therefore take them off, right? Why would you do that? Some people do or not. You know, I use a lot of offline safety analogies in general. I like to talk a lot about seatbelts. Let's talk about seatbelts. It would be like saying seatbelts don't, not everybody wears his seatbelt. Therefore, don't give anybody the opportunity to wear a seatbelt. Like, why would you do that? It would be the wrong way to make a car. And yet that's essentially not in those words, but that's basically the argument Google has made on occasions, right? And so
honestly, you know, I don't think I'm that rare of a user that when I go to, you know, my banking site, you know, a government site somewhere where I'm going to do something of any kind of importance or perhaps do commerce, if I don't see an extended validation UI, you know, the good old green bar,
right?
It there's a feeling of uncomfortableness, I have to admit. I mean, I've been running browsers as probably as long as you have, Tim.
Yeah.
This is just a, you know, the EV's been around quite a long time. That green bar has become a familiar part of my usage. And it's now a bit creepy. You know, thankfully there are browsers that still have it. Therefore, I use those browsers. But, you know, in experimentation, my goodness, it just feels a little bit uncomfortable to be on a site that I know should have that green bar and now does not.
And you've touched on, I think you touched on a point also gets brought up as an argument, and this comes up a lot. Anytime everybody says, look, I use this because blah, 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 what you hear from the opponents to the green address bar, which includes people from Google, is they will say, well, you're not typical. Well, you're unusual. And again, part of my response to that is I have two responses. One is, well, okay, so what? Let's say those people are atypical. Clearly, the amount of benefit is more than zero. There are people out there that benefit from this, and we know that because they get vocal every time this happens. So the amount of benefit is more than zero. Nobody has been able to articulate the benefit of taking it away. There is no benefit of taking it away. So that means that this is a net negative for us.
Yeah, in terms of any form of security, Tim, and we've been around security an awfully long time.
Yes.
There's no such thing ever as a silver bullet. And therefore, that's why we have layered security.
Correct. I mean, exactly right. It's a layered security approach. That's exactly correct. How do we defeat phishing? We do a bunch of things. We make it harder for the phishers to send emails, right? We make it harder for those emails to get delivered to inboxes. We take down their sites and we make it harder for them to exactly imitate a site. You do all of those things. And the last one is what we're talking about. It doesn't mean that you stop doing the others, but a good layered defense. And part of that is give the user at least the opportunity to save themselves and give them the tools they need to know the difference, and then focus on making those tools better and more visible. You know, it's funny to hear, well, these people aren't recognizing my indicator, so I'm scrapping it. If we were talking to the people at Google instead of the people who run the Chrome browser, if we were talking to the people who run Google Shopping and you were saying, well, they can't find the buy button, therefore take away the buy button, I guarantee you the Google Shopping people would say, no, we're going to find a way to make buy button more visible, right? Because at that point, they have some skin at that game. And those people recognize that they're able to do that, right? Those people say, look, we can do a better job of interface design, and better interface design enables end users to do the things they want to do. They know that.
But Tim, you know, let's push it even further with that whole entire address bar.
Yeah.
Because this is essentially what we're talking about, is the user interface that includes an address bar. Browsers have had that since day one, simply because of how the addressing works on the internet. One of the arguments that I've heard is, once again, you know, some users are unfamiliar with the technicalities of subdomains and domains themselves. Therefore, we should push everything through search.
Right.
And to me, that just smacks of pretty obvious motivation of commercialization and taking away what is a fundamental part of the user interface of a browser.
And who wins under those circumstances? Oh, you know, what do you know? It happens to be the guy who owns the browser and is making the decision. I'm sure that's a complete coincidence.
Well, yeah, exactly. And because it probably isn't a coincidence, that's why I bring it up.
Yeah.
But, you know, goodness gracious, I think that any browser that takes away an address address bar is not a browser that I'm using ever again, period. Like, come on, guys.
Yeah. So anyway, it's disturbing. It's sad. EV is not perfect. EV is light years ahead of anything else we have to let people truly identify who they're dealing with on a website. And taking that away just sets us back many steps. And if browsers had put any kind of effort into UX design around EV over the past decade and tried to make it better and more effective, there's no way we would have wound up here.
And by the way, Tim, if we're going to wait for a perfect solution, then at the same time, perhaps we should take a big broom and sweep away the entire expo floor at RSA.
Right. And everything else, right? I mean, we go back to my seatbelt analogy. If your dependency on a safety alternative is for it to be perfect, then as long as people still die in vehicular accidents or may die in vehicular accidents, why have seatbelts at all? Why have airbags at all? And of course, we all recognize the complete and utter absurdity of that in that context, which is why I use that example. And yet, basically, we're hearing the exact same thing about our browsers.
And you know what I haven't heard, Tim, is what's the alternative? What's the bright idea that's going to help stop phishing?
Right, exactly.
Especially from the browser standpoint.
Sure. And like I said, there's things you can try to do to make it harder to work. And there are secure email gateways and there's DMARC and there's other things that make it harder for phishing to work on the other side. But why are we not addressing the browser-based social engineering aspect of this to the best degree that we're able? And we absolutely have tools available to us to do this, and we're just deliberately walking away from them, right?
Yeah. So I'll tell you, there's an interesting concept with, perhaps this takes us just slightly too far away from this discussion, but I think it's worth just mentioning. Back in the day, there was a problem with users being socially engineered to download certificates for the purposes of man in the middle, especially for things like mobile devices and very, very specifically banking done on mobile devices.
Sure.
And so therefore, the one of the solutions was to certificate pin, use a certificate pinning technique to essentially only allow a specific certificate to be used by the actual native application in the mobile device. And that solved a lot of that kind of grief. If you were to use a similar, do a mind experiment and say to yourself, well, if I'm going to, X bank and the browser knows I'm going there because it was typed in a certain way and therefore only a certain specific certificate would be accepted, right? In other words, some form of certificate pinning. I think one of the problems we run into there, Tim, and it's probably a valid argument, is the addressing. Once you hard code an addressing to a specific site, it becomes very inflexible. And unfortunately, that's just not the way that these sites work. They need some form of flexibility because of how they load balance or however they want to be addressed on the internet.
Absolutely. They might be repatriating to another environment and they don't want to have to be limited to using the exact same certs they used at the old environment, et cetera. Yes.
Sure. So as a technical solution, it probably wouldn't work here simply for that. On the other hand, one of the advantages is if the argument is we need to take away the user from the decision-making process of whether or not a site is legitimate, then perhaps there is some form of technical solution where the browsers and the CAs can come together hand in hand. I mean, the CAs are already doing the good hard work of doing the identity verification, validation. There are other pieces of information, beyond what's done today in EV with respect to things such as, legal entity. Perhaps it needs to be a more generic company information that's vetted in a certain kind of way. I mean, this isn't baked out yet, but I there's still some hope here to come together for some kind of way of doing this correctly.
Sure.
I think throwing the baby out with the bathwater is not really the greatest solution.
And that's exactly right. There is a standards body called CA Browser Forum. It is populated by many CAs, more CAs than you would imagine, and many browsers, more browsers than you would imagine, and other interested parties. And there's a lot of brain power there, and there's no reason why this group couldn't be getting together and identifying all kinds of ways to use that information better. And one of the reasons that this has been a challenge challenge is because the CA Browser Forum is fundamentally a voluntary organization, it doesn't really have enforcement teeth when it comes to browsers. So the browsers ultimately get to do whatever they want. And browsers historically have been uninterested in changing their behavior based on what the CA Browser Forum wants. And that's part of how we've gotten here.
It's been a long road, and I don't think we're going down the right path.
Yeah, I agree. So we've probably belabored this enough. Thank you for indulging me, Jay. This has been on my mind, and I wanted an opportunity to vent. And hopefully this is informative for our listeners. And once again, this is definitely a story we'll continue to follow. I thank you, Jay, and this has been Root Causes.
Thanks, Tim.